I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
They created a work requirement for the first time, and the results that we saw were kind of incredible.
Work requirements for safety net programs and the positive impacts they can have, not only in lifting participants out of poverty, but also boosting their overall well-being.
Your daughter is actually probably really craving this information and doesn't know where to go to get it. And she probably wants to be able to talk to you about this.
Having the period talk. A special course helps parents guide their daughters through puberty and provides a healthy vision of the feminine cycle and fertility.
I think this is what God is saying is, you are going to cast the vision that I placed on your hearts, and then we're going to set the world on fire with it.
The deep and dark wounds of surviving an abortion, and the new national campaign that is revealing the lifelong heartache survivors carry.
Work is essential to who we are as humans. It's the way we shape the world around us, and honestly, work shapes us too.
Work, essential for forming healthy relationships, building society, and safeguarding a person's physical and mental well-being. The church teaches that work is an essential part of every person's innate dignity. It is a gift that allows us to take part in God's work of creation and to provide for our families. Throughout the Bible, there are multiple passages reflecting on work. From Genesis chapter 2, verse 15, where God settles man in the Garden of Eden to cultivate and care for it, to the Gospels, where, for example, in Luke chapter 3, verse 13, we're given guidelines for integrity in work when Jesus tells tax collectors to not collect more than what is prescribed. And, of course, we know that God himself came to work as a carpenter. In the U.S., employment requirements to receive government assistance has become a topic of debate. I had the opportunity to speak with Leslie Ford with Alliance for Opportunity, who has studied the impact of work requirements on safety net programs. Her findings on the relationship between rolling up one's sleeves and pro-life issues were surprising. Take a look. So, Les, why does work matter?
Yeah, I think that's a great question because in the context when we're talking about work requirements, sometimes we view work as a punishment. That's really not the Catholic position on work. I was just rereading John Paul II's on human work. And work is essential to who we are as humans. It's the way we shape the world around us, and honestly, work shapes us too. So when I was investigating this, especially in the context of low-income Americans, I was looking at Welfare Reform 1.0, the 1996 welfare reform. This was Bill Clinton, this was Newt Gingrich. It was a bipartisan effort to bring low-income Americans, usually single mothers who had been dependent for 8 years or more, back into the workforce, off the sidelines, back into the center of our communities. And so they created a work requirement for the first time. It was 20 hours, 30 hours a week, and it was either you can do paid work, you can volunteer, you can get education, anything to really advance from sitting on the sidelines back into the center. And the results that we saw were kind of incredible. We saw single mothers who were working increase by 20 points, and most important economically, we saw child poverty drop by 60%. But for me, it's really about the well-being story of these mothers. We saw depressive and physical health symptoms drop dramatically for those who returned to work. We saw child educational outcomes increase substantially. And I think important in the Catholic context, we actually saw out-of-wedlock birth rate flatline for the first time since 1964. So in 1964, the out-of-wedlock birth rate was around 7%, and by the 1990s, 40%. And really heavily concentrated in low-income communities. And so we saw that flatline, and when we saw that kind of even out, we also saw that the abortion rate even out. So well-being on every measure was connected into work, which wasn't necessarily surprising. It was a goal, but I think it's important to emphasize when we're talking about work in any context.
Les, those are very interesting findings. Could you go a little bit more into the teen pregnancy aspect of things?
Yeah, so the teen pregnancy aspect of things is a really surprising outcome of everything that was happening in the 1990s. And definitely a piece was, if you were pregnant as a teen, you would normally turn to cash benefits. And you might be dependent on those cash benefits for 8 or more years. But suddenly, when we instituted these work requirements, not only did the out-of-wedlock birth rate decline, not only did the abortion rate flatline, but teen pregnancy declined substantially. And it's we really begin to understand the importance of teaching what you should expect for your life. And so I want to shift slightly here, because when you're college educated, you're constantly, from a young age, you are taught the basic principles of graduate high school, even graduate college, get married, and then have children. We normally, in social science, we call that the success sequence. You're not going to be poor, or you're going to have a 2-3% chance of being poor if you follow those steps. And what we discovered in the 1990s was those lessons weren't being taught to low-income children, which is why we see the discrepancy between college-educated women, fewer than 1 in 10 have a child out of wedlock. But for a woman who has a high school education, it's 66%, so much higher. And when we started teaching the lesson of welfare is not a way of life, you need to delay pregnancies until you can take care of a child and work a job to take care of that child, we suddenly saw teen pregnancies decline as well, substantially. It is one of the unsung stories of the past 30 years, a real victory. But it does teach us not just good policy, but we also need collective action to teach good life lessons and teach the truth about motherhood and marriage.
Yes, and kind of in that same vein, I think it's very interesting that the abortion rate flatlined. Do you think that there's something the pro-life movement could be doing to kind of like take advantage of these findings?
Yeah, so I think these two aspects of policy, work and marriage and teaching the truth about what it is, motherhood is. I'm a mother of four. I understand how exceptionally difficult motherhood is and the necessity of a partner. And so there's a couple things. One, to recognize that those considering abortion are most heavily unmarried mothers. 90% are unmarried mothers. And when we do surveys of these young women, they say that their reasons for choosing abortion are financial. They're scared about the asymmetry of what women go through when they experience motherhood, but they're also worried about their relationships. And so we really do have to teach the success sequence even earlier. But hey, say you get something out of order, say you end up pregnant out of wedlock, we have to tell the story that, okay, if you return to work, if you find a partner and get married, you will overcome poverty. And so, yes, these mothers who are pregnant out of wedlock, they're experiencing an injustice. Mm-hmm. And so we have to walk alongside them to make sure that they can come through the breach okay, make sure they have the financial support they need, the relational support they need, and they have a long-term plan for work and marriage.
The medical and healthcare industries in our secular world typically embrace the pro-abortion narrative, but one organization is committing itself to the pro-life movement. Presidio Healthcare is the self-proclaimed first pro-life health insurance company. The organization is still in the fundraising stage and hoping to launch soon with the help of investors. I spoke with Daniel Cruz, one of the founders of Presidio, about this new venture. Daniel, thank you for joining us. First, can you tell us why you want to launch this pro-life health insurance company?
Abby, thanks so much for having me on the show. Yes, our company is called Presidio Healthcare, and we're the nation's first pro-life Christian health insurance company. And we really built this for Christian American families who they want great health insurance that's affordable, that's pro-life, and importantly, that is financially secure. So nobody wants, you know, their hard-earned money to go towards services that violate their deepest held religious beliefs about the human person. And sadly, you know, most health insurance, if you have traditional insurance, it's going to cover things like abortion, abortifacients, contraceptions, sterilizations, all sort of services that violate the Catholic faith. So primarily, we want to make sure that as a Catholic entity, our customers know 100% of your dollars are not going to go towards these services that violate your faith. Secondarily, you know, the only option that people currently have is these things called Christian health sharing ministry plans. Mm-hmm. And while we love that exists as an unregulated backstop in this industry, millions and millions of American Christian families simply find them to be financially risky because they're not legally health insurance. They don't have legal obligation to pay your medical bills. And I can say as myself, you know, as a father of four, we got our fifth baby on the way. The last thing that I want is if you have a premature baby or a NICU baby, things happen where you have medical bills of $100,000, $500,000, $1 million. The last thing you want is that fear or that unknown of, hey, is this medical bill going to be paid? So we made sure that we are a health insurance, not a health sharing plan, so that we can, you know, alleviate some of that financial risk for American families out there.
And President Trump is seeking to expand in vitro fertilization access. As Catholics, we know the church is opposed to IVF. How does Presidio work with couples struggling with infertility to access care that is aligned with the Catholic faith?
Yeah, you know, it's really unfortunate that the administration has kind of gone down this path. I think it underscores the need for organizations like Presidio, faith-based health insurance options that can really secure the full power of a religious exemption to what might be future mandates on IVF. But you know what? It's a great time to be a Catholic in healthcare because there's been a reawakening and a reevaluation of our healthcare system, away from one where it's really sick care. You're not treating the underlying condition of the human person. You're just having a medicated or technological band-aid. And no greater example of this than the in vitro fertilization industry, where, you know, if you have infertility struggles, you go to an OBGYN, most of them are not trained to actually deal with the actual underlying condition that's causing the infertility. And what they'll do is they'll send you to clinics that are really a conveyor belt to a very expensive IVF option that not only, you know, breaks the unity of the marital bond between, you know, man and woman, but unfortunately also disposes of human embryos and ends life.
Now, does Presidio do any work to help mothers choose life?
Absolutely. That is one of our missions, is we want to help. We want to be the opposite of the health insurance industry that's trying to essentially limit the amount of babies. We want more women, more couples to really embrace and be open to life. And, you know, sadly, you know, we John Paul II was very, very clear that, you know, contraception and abortion are really fruits of the same tree. Mm-hmm. And so what we want to do is get further upstream from the decision of abortion and really start to help young women, young couples have access to, again, these natural fertility awareness methods. Mm-hmm. So what we want to do is we want to help these women get low cost access to these tools, like things like the Mira app, things that really help in tracking. But then on top of that, low-cost access to these physicians, so that when these couples are kind of downstream from some of these, you know, unfortunate decisions down the road, they can really start to embrace a culture of life early in their relationship and, you know, reject the lie of culture that says drop your cross, you know, avoid the what is a sacrifice to have children, but instead, you know, preach the gospel in these moments and say, yes, it is hard. It is a sacrifice. I'm a father. I've seen my wife go through multiple pregnancies. But you know what? The path to the resurrection is the cross. And so sometimes you just need a little bit of a guidance, whether it's a physician or a friend. And for our little part in this, we can at least provide that guidance from trusted physicians that can help, you know, young couples, young women really seek these alternatives that remain and keep them open to life.
Well, Daniel, thank you so much for the work that you and Presidio are doing, and count on our prayers.
Thank you so much, Abby.
Daniel Cruz says Presidio will have a tool to help customers connect with pro-life and Catholic providers. You can learn more about Presidio Healthcare by visiting their website, presidiocare.com.
They learn all these things for the first time, usually in their pre-cana classes or when they take an NFP course.
Women are learning pertinent facts about their bodies, their cycles, and becoming a mother much later than they should, sometimes just before or after marriage, when this information will most affect them. A course developed by a pro-life organization aims to equip young girls with the scientific knowledge they need to know about the female body. It's called Period Genius. It's a series of courses provided by Natural Womanhood. The course explains the female hormone cycle and helps young women understand their dignity and unique value so they have a healthy vision of their cycles and fertility.
So many of us have heard the same refrain from women who are engaged, you know, in their 20s, their 30s, when they first learn about their bodies for the first time, say, why didn't I learn this before?
I spoke with Grace Stark from Natural Womanhood, who explains why mothers and their daughters don't need to be intimidated by the female body. Rather, they should embrace it. What would your message be to mothers who might feel a little intimidated about tackling the subject with their daughters?
I would say that you don't need to be intimidated, that your daughter is actually probably really craving this information and doesn't know where to go to get it. And she probably wants to be able to talk to you about this. And so have that confidence that with a program like ours, you don't have to be an expert, and that we give you the tools to be able to teach your daughter just this really important information, that teach her what life will be like as a woman. You know, don't let other people step in, because if you're too intimidated and you're not the one who helps teach your daughter what it is to be a woman, we know there's all sorts of forces in our culture that are going to try to tell her what they think it means to be a woman. Don't be intimidated. And one of my very favorite quotes that we have from a mom who has done our course is that she loves the changes she has seen in herself, talking about her femininity, her womanhood, so positively for the very first time in her life. So we're seeing not only changes in the daughters who do this, but the moms too, which is really beautiful.
That's incredible. Now, Jason Everett, Catholic author and speaker on chastity, said this course helps young women, quote, increase the reverence they feel about their own bodies. That's a very powerful statement. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, because again, I think so many young women go through puberty without the context for what it means. So if you are growing breasts, if your hips are widening, I can remember being a preteen and I was a competitive swimmer my whole life, starting at, you know, age 8. And the times for competing for girls were actually faster up until about the 12, 13, 14 age group. And then the boys' times got faster. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of reasons for that, right? The big one being puberty. And so for girls, we're gaining all these curves. And boys with testosterone are gaining new muscles and things that make them bigger and faster and stronger for the first time. And if you don't have context for why those things are happening, to girls, it can feel really unfair. Mm-hmm. It can feel like, wow, why all of a sudden can I not outcompete the boys like I used to when I was 8 and 9 and 10? Maybe your curves are attracting unwanted attention, unwanted comments. If you don't have context for any of why this stuff is happening to you, it can feel very profoundly unfair. And when you see the fallout in our culture of girls going through these things without context, without an understanding that these changes are good and they're beautiful and they're oriented towards the potential to create new life someday, then we see, you know, situations like girls wanting to opt out of femininity entirely. And so I think that Jason Everett quote, I love it so much, because it really does speak to what we're trying to do with this Period Genius program, which is to get girls to see, even before they start menstruating, that there's a purpose behind all of this. It's not just your lot in life as a woman to suffer and to not be as fast or as strong as the boys, and it's so unfair. It's all rooted towards something that is so profoundly beautiful and wonderful and ultimately holy.
What an inspiring message. And then you touched on this, but what are some other misconceptions young women have about their bodies?
Definitely a big one is that if you are struggling with painful periods, and so we see this with young girls who've started menstruating and they're bleeding very heavily, they have very painful periods, this idea that there's no help for you unless you want to go on the pill. That's a huge misconception that we actually address in the Period Genius program. Part of it is helping moms and daughters identify when things are wrong with your cycle, because you should never have such a painful period that you're missing sports, that you're missing school, that you're missing out on life. In the course, we talk about how to identify issues with the cycle and the kinds of medical professionals that you can look for who will actually treat the root causes of cycle irregularities. And the great thing about this, Abby, is that later on, this is going to help your daughter be able to get pregnant when she wants to become a mom. Because a lot of issues with the cycle are the root cause of infertility later on. And goodness gracious, do we see that being a huge issue right now, right? Yes. And so teaching your daughter about her body, getting her the help that she needs early on is a way that we head off all of the things that culture is throwing at our daughters as they get older. And it all makes them healthier on the whole, too. That's what's really great about all of this and restorative reproductive medicine is we're improving overall health when we look at the cycle for what it is, which is a woman's fifth vital sign.
I love that. Grace, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And just thank you to you and Natural Womanhood for what you're doing to educate women about their bodies. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can learn more about Period Genius by visiting naturalwomanhood.courses. When we return, survivors of abortion are raising their voices to be heard across the nation. The campaign that is working to combat the pro-abortion narrative, one story at a time. Stay with us.
She said, "Claire, I didn't choose life for you. I'm so sorry. Your life is a miracle." I didn't. I'm so sorry. And I thought, what is she even talking about?
Life-changing stories from survivors of abortion. The voices that are tackling the narrative that abortion is so-called healthcare to shed light on the horror and heartbreak of abortion. Men and women are sharing their unfiltered stories of survival from abortion attempts in a campaign called My Body, My Voice. I spoke with Melissa Oden, the founder of the Abortion Survivors Network, about the inspiration for this collective and the impact it is having. Melissa, it's such a pleasure to have you here with us today. Please, can you tell us about My Body, My Voice? What inspired you to launch this new storytelling initiative? And can you touch on that incredible title?
Thank you. Yeah, the title in and of itself is a really Holy Spirit moment. You know, I've been passionate about storytelling, you know, from the moment I got involved in the pro-life movement back in about 2008. And, you know, we know that people are impacted by stories. And, you know, for abortion survivors, we know that our stories are impactful. And so this has really been a long time of prayer and discernment on how do we share stories most effectively that's respectful to those who have them. And this has been a great opportunity to partner with Choose Life Marketing. And that's really, that was the Holy Spirit inspired moment when we've talked about this for probably almost 2 years. And then we were in a meeting to prepare it and, you know, went through a list of names and I was fed up. I couldn't think of anything else. And all of a sudden I went, My Body, My Voice.
Wow, that's amazing.
And so we all knew that, right? Everybody just kind of went, I have chills.
Yeah, that's incredible. And can you share, what is the distinction between My Body, My Voice and the Abortion Survivors Network?
So our day-to-day at the Abortion Survivors Network hasn't changed. We provide community and support and healing resources to, you know, abortion survivors of every age, moms who are impacted by their failed abortion, and family members as well, who often need support and struggle with finding hope and answers to the questions that they have about their child's life. But what this initiative really allows us to do, Abby, is, you know, partner together to do what we do well, which are those day-to-day things, and then partner with Choose Life Marketing, who do such an incredible job at the marketing and the social media and the videography. And so I think that's what God wants us to do in the pro-life movement. And of course, in all of our vocations, but especially the pro-life movement, take one organization's gifts and pair them with another organization's gifts, and he's going to do miraculous things.
Amen. That's so important, this partnering together and working together, not having to reinvent the wheel and do it all ourselves. And now I believe I read that a component of this initiative is collaboration with churches, advocacy groups, and faith-based organizations. Can you speak to this?
Yes, for us, this is really, you know, just the beginning. I really feel like it is. And not just for us, but really, I think this is what God is saying is, you are going to cast the vision that I placed on your hearts, and then we're going to set the world on fire with it, right? Catherine of Siena, St. Catherine of Siena, right there. And so this is what we want to do is record these videos, which if folks haven't seen it already, it's My Body - My Voice. And one of the most powerful stories so far is of a 79-year-old abortion survivor who was born in an abortion clinic after her birth mom's abortion failed. And so what we know we can do, Abby, as we're talking about being efficient and most impactful, is put these in the hands of churches and policymakers, right? Those folks who need to hear the stories and know how to talk about abortion in a different way. And so this is our great opportunity to not only share the truth and empower those impacted by abortion, but then to empower our entire public with the stories and the truth. Because for me, this is what it looks like to really restore a culture of life.
Mm-hmm. And then I believe you had talked about an example with an Ohio policy initiative that was going through. Can you talk to the role that the stories you shared played?
Oh, yes. You know, polling has showed us time and time again that, you know, first of all, we get outstoried by the abortion industry and their lobby. I mean, and that's one of the things I'm so thankful that you all do at EWTN is you help us so we can fight back against being outstoried. But it is long past time that we get more creative about how we go up against the behemoth of the abortion industry and lobby. So, you know, this is really about what polling tells us, which is in those amendment states, when you are sharing the story, and Claire Colwell's story was one of them in Ohio, that particular video with her story had great impact. People reported at the polls that it moved the needle for them. And, you know, that is a key piece of this is we want to change hearts and minds day in and day out, long before anyone goes to the ballot box. That's how we...
No, that's great. And quickly before we close, is there anything, what would you hope this initiative can accomplish?
Well, I really do believe this is the greatest opportunity we've had in the pro-life movement to have a national storytelling campaign. And so if folks want to find out more about it, please follow it at My Body, My Voice, but also follow the Leadership Institute, Secular Pro-Life, and the Abortion Survivors Network. We've been doing online trainings, really doing grassroots level work, equipping people with stories and really lay people on how to best share stories impactfully while having respect for the folks who have the stories, which ultimately drives more healing.
Well, Melissa, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
You can listen to all of these compelling stories at mybody-myvoice.org. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.